Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jimmy Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and as you've been hearing on the news, pressure is mounting for Syrian President Assad to step down. This morning, Secretary Clinton announced strict sanctions against Syria, and President Obama was joined by the leaders of the European Union in calling for his resignation amid the mounting crackdown on anti-government revolt. On the Brian Lehrer Show, we've been talking about protests all week, the protests happening throughout the Arab region, in Israel, London, even Chile, and now we're turning to India. Jailed Indian anti-corruption activist Anna Hazare will start his 15-day public hunger strike tomorrow outside the capital in New Delhi. Hazare has inspired tens of thousands of people to support his protest against the scandal-plagued government of Prime Minister Singh, and within 24 hours of his arrest, more than 120,000 Indians signed an online petition demanding his release. That is a rate of almost 70 people a second. Anna Hazare has apparently struck a chord. He's become an anti-corruption icon with comparisons to Mohandas Gandhi. So will his protest become a widespread movement in the world's largest democracy? Joining us now to discuss is Amol Sharma, correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, covering the story in New Delhi. Welcome to WNYC.
Good to be with you.
So, first of all, for people who have never heard of Anna Hazare, tell us who he is and precisely what his cause is.
Well, Anna Hazare is a 73-year-old social activist. He started his career in the military in the 60s and then eventually turned towards social service after a spiritual conversion of sorts. And then he eventually became a leading voice against corruption. And now he's at the forefront of a movement to create a strong anti-corruption ombudsman in India, which has been a priority for activists for decades, for four decades, but they've never close. And so he's been the figurehead of that movement, and this summer, it's really gained traction, and the protests are swelling, and the pressure on the government is really increasing.
And we want to hear from Indian Americans in our audience. Has this story struck a chord with you? Are you paying attention to the story? Are you sympathetic to Hazare's movement? And what are you hearing from friends and family back in India about Hazare and government corruption? 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or go to WNYC.org, post a comment there. And Amol Sharma, who we are joined by from New Delhi, this 15-day protest by Hazare is on the end, the tail end of a standoff with police. Is that not right after Hazare was jailed? Can you explain for those who are not following the story the events of the last few days and the protests, everything that brought Anna Hazare to this point?
Sure. This week, what basically happened is Hazare was trying to organize a large demonstration in Delhi that he wanted to go on for as long as a month. And so he sought a permit from the police to do that. He wanted no restrictions on the size of the protest or the length, really. And the police basically came back and said, look, we'll only let you do it for 3 days. They claimed that law and order was an issue and that he would be disturbing the city. And Hazare was firm and said, I'm going to go forward with this whether I have official sanction or not. So he was jailed on Tuesday preemptively before this protest even started. Since then, you know, in the last 24 to 48 hours, there were just widespread demonstrations and protests erupting around the country. I was at India Gate in central Delhi last evening, and there were just tens of thousands of people milling around demanding his release, demanding that he be allowed to hold his protest with no restrictions. So it really became a debate over civil society's right to assemble, to hold a to air its views without the government putting all these restrictions on it. And that worked. So he was the government basically has given in and has said you can go forward with a 15-day, not 30 days, but a 15-day protest, no limits on who can come. And he essentially has won this standoff, and now tomorrow his hunger fast will start.
And it is not his first hunger fast, correct?
That's right. In April, he held a 5-day fast. That was the first time they were able to force the government to actually push for some kind of anti-corruption law. This is the law that he's pushing for would create an agency that would. An independent agency to prosecute corruption cases at the highest level of government, and it would have wide-ranging powers to do so. So he, in April, has fast accomplished that. The government said, "Okay, we'll write some kind of law," and everything since then, in the last few months, has been about, well, what kind of teeth will it have? What kind of powers will it really have? And that's of the government's proposal. Hazari supporters feel it's far too weak, and it's really just. It's not a serious crackdown on corruption. That has led to these further protests, and this fast is basically about whether Hazare's version of the agency will be created, a really tough ombudsman, or what he feels is a weaker version, which the government is pushing.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Amol Sharma, correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, and he is covering the story of Anna Hazare, who will start a 15-day public hunger strike tomorrow outside the capital of India in New Delhi. And we welcome your calls on this. Does this inspire you? Are you paying attention to this story? Have you heard about this? And what do you think of this as a political strategy, a hunger strike, a form of protest, individual protest? 120,000 people have signed a petition in support of this political leader and social activist. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And Amol Sharma, tell us about recent government scandals which set off this call for anti-corruption measures. I understand it has something to do with the Commonwealth Games in October something also to do with a November report that found that there was rigging in the 2008 mobile technology spectrum. This all sounds like, it's very nitty gritty, but when we're talking about 120,000 people signing on, it clearly has struck a chord with the populace.
Yeah, I mean, people in India are familiar with corruption and are resigned to the way it permeates everyday life, whether it's bribes that you have to pay, police officers wanting a bribe or government officials for the smallest thing, when you're in the equivalent of the DMV here. But what has happened recently is that there have been these eye-popping corruption scandals where billions of dollars have been at stake or have been lost to the national exchequer. And so the telecom scandal you mentioned really was a turning point. That was last fall when a government auditor said that, look, there was really fishy business in the government's auction of these mobile phone airwaves, and they felt that there was that these frequencies were being given away at cut-rate prices to favored companies. And reading between the lines, there was corruption being alleged there, that these companies had done something for this quid pro quo. The numbers that were tossed around, $40 billion, maybe $30, $40, $50 billion, had never been heard of in India before. Mm-hmm. These kinds of sums in the corruption scandal. So it's awoken the country that this isn't just petty corruption anymore. This is big time. The Commonwealth Games just hit that home further. There was a series of contracting and corruption scandals there, and it's been a steady drumbeat. I mean, there have been state-level scandals over mining of ore in one of the southern states, where a lot of companies were found to have either attempted to or successfully bribed government officials to get mining contracts. So it's become a just a drumbeat of corruption scandals in the last few months. Hmm.
Let's take a call from Raul, who is calling in from Westport, Connecticut. Raul, thank you for your call. You're on WNYC with the Wall Street Journal's Amul Sharma.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, so, I've been following this story. Essentially, I was not, but, was drawn to it because you cannot go on Facebook and not have messages from your friends, back in India and, not get your attention drawn to it. So essentially, I've at least 3 points which I would like to make. Number one, I am, of course, not for corruption. I totally am against corruption, but I just don't like the way Anazari and his camp, including, other Ramdev and Sri Sri, there's another holy man, quote unquote, who has joined his bandwagon. And, the way they protest, it's basically disrupting the law and order and, putting their followers and the city of Delhi. They're basically holding it hostage and then they want their demands. Number two, it's not, about the law. It's more importantly about the implementation of the law. Laws are still there in India, but the implementation is so poor. So no matter if you're going to have another stricter law or whatever, but if you're not going to implement it, it doesn't make any difference. And the third point is, even though, I know you keep repeating the number 120,000 Facebook followers, that's a very small number compared to the number of people you have in India. It's like,
Excellent point. It's
a village, So it sounds impressive, but I don't think it is that impressive. But I do understand, like, he has a big movement and everything going behind him.
Thank you so much, Raul, for your call. And this is a point you made this morning earlier. I heard you, Amul Sharma, on National Public Radio about the relative numbers. And it's a very, very good point that Raul makes. And we've mentioned the number to sign on to the petition a couple of times. And at the top of the segment, we talked about the numbers who turned out in protest. But we do have to put it into context, don't we?
We do. I mean, this is a country of 1.2, almost 1.3 billion people. So, yes, it's very difficult to gauge, even with the rate of signups on that petition, how far and how deep, how broad and deep is the support for Hazare in the middle class or in the lower classes, the masses that make up most of the country. So, I mean, one of the interesting things that was pointed out to me today by an expert who studies corruption here in India, he said, look, in the U.S., you gather input on major pieces of legislation. You have public hearings in Congress where people show up and they find professors and activists from different sides of the spectrum to give input before a bill is written. In India, that doesn't really happen. That part of the process and engagement with civil society isn't there. So the government, the ruling party, essentially writes a bill behind the scenes and then drops it on the parliament, and then the debate ensues. So the problem is, even though Hazare has been very vocal and he may be able to influence through his hunger fast how this corruption legislation turns out, there are other social activists who have slightly different views than him, in some cases significantly different. There are different ideas that haven't even come to the fore yet. So some people are worrying, what if there's somebody else who comes out and says, wait a minute, here's the correct way to do an anti-corruption law, and they hold a giant protest. So there's some dangerous precedents that people are worried that, if his tactics are successful, will it create kind of a confusing marketplace of ideas to do policymaking in India? And will it not be clear how to do these kinds of sensitive pieces of legislation in the future? So I take Raul's point. And in terms of the implementation, he's exactly right that people are saying, look, even if you have somebody to prosecute corruption, you need to increase the salaries of government employees so that the temptation to demand a bribe is less. You have to change governance top to bottom administratively so that there aren't so many people tempted to do these things. So I think that, those are good points.
Yeah, and let's take another caller. Sharif is calling from Brooklyn. Sharif, you're on WMYC with Amul Sharma in New Delhi.
Yeah. I'd like to say that, you know, like his personal background should be checked out where he was born. And then the way he speaks like a saint, I don't think he's a saint either. When his background is checked up, you know, and he's trying to create a total anarchy and he's just against any government, you know, just to come into the limelight. That's the way these politicians of new breed come up as saints, you know, and become monsters eventually end up, you know. And then when he's given a clout over there, you know, and if he's successful, this will replicate all over India, and it's not good for the development of the country.
Thank you so much, Sharif, for your call. I understand, Amol, that he was born in Bengal, which is in the Bombay province, but both of these callers question his credentials, his motivations. But many others I've read have made the comparison to Mahatma Gandhi. What about that? He wears the white cotton garb. Do you think Hazare is consciously trying to tap into the spirit and legacy of Gandhi's independence movement? It's certainly a bold endeavor of anyone to try to channel Gandhi.
Yeah, he is well aware of the comparisons. And, I mean, look, he's managed to galvanize this popular large-scale movement with nonviolent demonstrations and hunger fests, which are two tactics that Gandhi masterfully used to protest British rule in India. But we have to keep in mind, the cause here is much different. Hazare calls this India's second freedom struggle, which is a way of invoking that era of the Gandhi era and the independence movement in India. But this isn't a fundamental protest against the form of government in India, against the constitution. This is different. This is a protest demanding that the democratically elected parliament do its job by cracking down on corruption. So it's still very, very important. It's very dramatic, but it has some real differences with Gandhi. And I also think anyone who tries to compare themselves to Gandhi does so, It's very treacherous to try to do that. He's such a revered figure. And as you can hear from the caller, there's such skepticism now that people, it's very hard to separate who are the people, who activists who are acting in good faith to protect the public interest and who might be just running the next scam. And it makes it very hard, even if you're a well-meaning activist, to sustain public momentum, which will be Hazare's challenge in the next few days.
And India, as you suggest, is a very different place now than it was in Gandhi's time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of the ways that Hazare identifies with Gandhi include his, you know, skepticism of industrialization run amok and the notion that India should be self-reliant and village-centric, which were things that Gandhi was a proponent of. And those in the modern era in India, with the rapid industrial development that's happening and 9% economic growth and foreign companies at least trying to come in wherever they can, it can feel a little outdated to try to apply all of his philosophies to the modern era. At the same time, some of the political philosophies he had have, and again, his nonviolent tactics of protesting mm-hmm. still have a lot of resonance yeah. today and have a place in political culture.
Eternal application, for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Amol.
Thank you.
Amol Sharma, correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. He joined us from New Delhi, India. And coming up next, pregnancy reduction and why going from 2 to 1 makes so many people uneasy. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Stay with us.